To the left-hand side for Vieira, who'll play through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus seals the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel header, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Welcome back to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast, part of the 90 Min Football family, with me, your host, as always, Harry Simeon. This is our moment. Arsenal take on Manchester City in what's being dubbed as a title decider. But is it that simple? We're going to get into that. We're going to talk team news, lineups, predictions, and we're going to take lots of your thoughts and questions from the live chat. Hope you're all good. Hope you're all well. Thank you so much for joining me as always. Remember, if you are watching us live on X right now, feel free to hop over to the YouTube channel, subscribe, leave a like on the video, all of that good stuff, and you will be able to access all of our content. If you're listening on audio as well, please do leave us a review, as it really, really does help. Look, this is a massive, massive game that could have huge implications on the title race. I'm not personally going to go as far as saying it's a title decider, because I think there's so much more football to be played. There are lots of complications, lots of factors that come into play. Champions League, how much of an impact will that have? Does the fact that Liverpool are in the Europa League mean they can focus more on the Premier League than maybe ourselves and Manchester City? We did our title race prediction episode yesterday. I got lots and lots of stick in the comments for suggesting that Arsenal are probably the third favourites for the title at this moment. Maybe that changes if Arsenal can go to the Etihad on Sunday and win. But given the size of this game, given the magnitude of this game, I thought we'd do something different. And I thought we'd get somebody from the other side of the fence to give us the download on his team, on his club, and help us try and make sense of what may or may not happen at the weekend. And I'm delighted to say that Manchester City fan Kim Kotari is with me. Kim, welcome to the show, mate. Great to see you. It's been a long time since we've
been
spoken.
A long, how you been? While. Do you remember, I think the last time we met face-to-face was the last title running, and we were both having a debate on who was going to get the title at the end of the season.
Yeah, and you were right. I was trying to be optimistic. I was trying to be positive, but it just didn't happen in the end. How have you been outside of football? Everything good?
Yeah, very, very well, thank you.
For those that are watching this, and we'll see Kim obviously wearing his Manchester City top. He logged on not wearing a Manchester City top, to be honest, and he went, "You're wearing an Arsenal top. You know what? I'm going to go put my City top on." He means
you've got to show your colours, especially ahead of the big game, haven't you?
Absolutely. First of all, how are you feeling about this game? Because I know Arsenal fans are stressing about it. We're all, in a weird way, optimistic in the sense of, you know, we feel more confident in this side than maybe Arsenal sides of recent years in terms of their ability to go to the Etihad and get a result. But I'm stressed. I'm nervous. I'm probably not going to get much sleep tonight or the night after. Where are you and how are your nerves?
Well, it's weird because I think any other season other than this, I would be feeling a lot more confident than I am. And I think there's a few factors to that. The first one is that City's record against the top six this year has been very, very poor. I mean, we've allowed Chelsea to allowed Chelsea two draws, drew against Spurs, lost and, you know, drew twice against Liverpool and stuff like that. So we haven't been playing that well against the big sides. Of course, lost against Arsenal at the Emirates as well. So that fills me with a little bit of nerves because I don't think we've been that ruthless against the big teams as we have in previous seasons. And I also think that injuries to Kyle Walker, who is 50-50 at the moment, and John Stones will play a massive, massive impact. I think Stones has probably been one of, apart from Rodri, probably the most important City player this season. Every time he plays, we look like a completely different side. So it makes me feel nervous. But then we're at home. Pep's record against Arsenal, particularly at home, is incredible. Arsenal, I would say, no disrespect to the side at all, who are playing fantastic football at the moment, in the squad probably don't have the exact same experience as the City squad in these big crunch matches, which favours us as well. So I'd say I'm fairly confident, but as confident as you can be coming up against a team like Arsenal in what, as you said, it's probably not going to be, but it could be a title decider.
Let me ask you this. You mentioned that the record against the traditional big six, if you like, or the top six sides nowadays hasn't been as good as it has been in recent years. What do you put that down to?
I really, really don't know. And I've been thinking about it pretty much every single week because we're conceding more goals. The defence looks more frail, but we've added £100 million centre-back. We've still got Ruben Dias. We've still got Kyle Walker, who I think isn't, his powers are waning, but he's still, you know, he's still a good, very good player. We've got Nathan Ake, who's treble winning left back. I don't actually understand why City have conceded so many more goals this year. I think it was understandable that we lost against you at the Emirates because we didn't have Rodri, and everybody knows that City without Rodri are basically a completely different side. I think one large part, which maybe this is me reaching, look, I'm not going to lie to you. If you look at the back of my shirt, it's got Jack Grealish on it. I might be reaching because I love the guy. But I think him being out all season has impacted us quite a lot in terms of the lack of control that we have, particularly on that left-hand side, but also all over the pitch. I mean, it was really stark to me. We played against Copenhagen in the Champions League and he was fit for the first half an hour. And the way we were playing for the first half an hour allowed them genuinely probably about 5% possession, and we were playing so much better. As soon as he goes off, they were having quite a lot of counter-attacking chances. So I think we've lost quite a lot of control on that left-hand side because that is how we play. We play a lot by giving the ball to Jack Grealish, letting him take his time, letting him slow everything down, bringing everyone up the pitch. Whereas when he's not playing, it doesn't seem like we have that same amount of control. And that might be a massive reach, but I can't understand that many other factors of why we're conceding so many goals this year.
You mentioned Grealish and the impact him not being in the team has had. Lots of people were raving about Jeremy Doku at the start of the season. I think he's a really talented player. But in that, are you suggesting that Jeremy Doku is not as effective as Jack Grealish? I know they're very different players. He likes to take people on and get to the byline a lot more. And Grealish obviously likes to come inside and get involved that way. But has that impacted maybe the balance in the Manchester City side overall? Yeah.
Absolutely, and I think that balance has probably led to us being more susceptible on the counter attack, which is probably why we're conceding so many like high XG chances, if you will. I think they are two completely different players, and I think if you ask Pep if Jack's on form, he would play every big game. And I think Doku is a better style of footballer to play against slightly weaker defenses or potentially against teams who play more attacking football against us. So maybe a Real Madrid might be quite good for Doku to play because there'll be spaces in behind. But I think in big games, I mean, if Jack is fit and he has been training, I think he certainly starts tomorrow. I mean, he was really vital last year. He scored, obviously, at the Emirates. In the big game, he scored against Liverpool at home. He was instrumental in the Champions League. So I think he would be the favoured pick on that side, just as you say, for the balance and for the control of the team, because realistically, we are not set up to win a game on the counter-attack. It's not the way Pep Guardiola plays. It's not the way he's ever played. And it's not the way he's coached all of these City players over the last five or so years to play. So I thought that the Doku signing was a little bit strange because, okay, like we always say at the moment, there aren't that many people who get you off your seat in football. So when he plays, I obviously love it. Like there's a Diag, it gets switched to him, he's on the ball. You have no idea what he's going to do. The defender has no idea what he's going to do. And it is really exciting. But I think in terms of winning big football matches, he wouldn't be my pick as of yet. But obviously a couple of years under Pep, if Pep stays that long, then he could be a completely different prospect.
You've mentioned a couple of things. You've said that, in your opinion, Jack Grealish being out has maybe upset the balance a little bit of the Manchester City attack. And you've referenced the fact that defensively, for whatever reason, Manchester City are not quite as solid as they have been in recent years. People often say to me when we're talking about the title race, and I'm not talking about Manchester City fans, I'm talking about non-City fans, neutrals, Arsenal fans, Liverpool fans, etc. People always say to me, why are you giving City so much respect? They are not the City that they were last year or maybe in years gone by. Based on what you've told me, I feel like you kind of believe that as well. Is that fair? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, I agree. I I can't quite put my finger on it, because there have been a few instances this season, more than a few instances, where City have looked like the City that we all know, and that I know and love anyway, the treble winning City. But there has been something missing this season, and I'm not quite sure what it is. And I think, with no disrespect to City, to Arsenal or Liverpool, if City were playing as well as they possibly could, would we be in a title race? Because at the beginning of the season, obviously Rodri was out for about 8 or so games, and that massively, massively impacted the side. As I said, I think we had a really poor run. I don't think we won in like 4 games or something like that. You know, we went to Chelsea, we conceded 4, all of that kind of thing. So I think the beginning of the season wasn't good. I think we are coming back to our best at the moment, but I still don't think we're there. So I think for Arsenal fans, this is a really, really, really good chance to A, prove yourselves, but also B, actually play a City side who probably aren't as strong as they were last year, and are also slightly injury hit at the moment, so won't be as strong in personnel either.
You mentioned Kyle Walker, you mentioned John Stones. Both of those are injury doubts. Arsenal have got some injury doubts of their own as well. We're not sure how much of their international withdrawals was down to being extra overly cautious, given the magnitude of this game, and how much of it is genuine. There's talk that Gabriel, Saka and Martinelli all have to face fitness tests. That would be a massive blow to Arsenal if any of those weren't available.
I'll give you £1,000 if Saka's not in the starting lineup.
This is recording, remember. What is the story with Walker and Stones? I know you touched on it. I know you said Walker's 50-50. Is that the case? Is that what people are saying within City circles?
Yeah, well, the training pictures obviously came out yesterday. So Ederson was training, which we didn't think he would be. De Bruyne's been training. Jack Grealish has been training. And Mateus Nunes has been training. He picked up an injury in the international break as well. But both John Stones and Kyle Walker were absent from training. And I think that's Thursday. The game's Sunday. I can't see them. I just can't see them playing the game. I suppose if they're fit today, then they've got 1 or 2 days of training. But if they're not actually present on the field at all, not even doing light training, I'd be very surprised to see them play. And as I say, I think that really, really impacts the squad. I know Akanji was injured as well during the national break, and he probably would have been the natural one to slot in either in the John Stones position or filling in for Kyle Walker at right back. He has been training, but not in full training either. So the defence looks a bit threadbare. And with Ederson being out for so long and only just returning, we could potentially have a back four of, you know, Ortega Moreno, Rico Lewis, Diaz and Guardiola and Ake. And that's not anywhere near a top strength back four for City. So if Martinelli and Saka do play, there's definitely spaces that they can attack the City, especially in those wide areas.
I've got to ask you for your take on Arsenal, because last season, you know, as you mentioned, we had a debate. I think it was for Talk TV, wasn't it?
We had a debate
about the title charge, and you were pretty confident at the time that City would come good and would have too much for Arsenal, and you were right. Arsenal fell away. I think injuries played a big part in that, and you could see at that point that the squad just wasn't ready to compete at the highest level, because the minute you took 1 or 2 really key components out, the level not only dropped but literally stoned. You know, it went all the way down really quickly, and that, you know, I think nothing was more sort of nothing highlighted that more than when we turned up at the Etihad with Rob Holding at the back instead of William Saliba and literally got torn to pieces. I was at that game, and I remember sitting there at the end of the match from my position and thinking, like, I can't even be upset, angry. You know, it literally was just men against boys. And for me, a lot of Arsenal fans threw their toys out of the pram after that and were really upset about it. And there was Arteta talk again, which just seems like a nonsense to me from some quarters. But for me, it really was a case of, this is just a humbler that tells us and shows us that we're not quite where we need to be yet if we want to be winning the Premier League title. This season, Mikel Arteta made some changes in the summer that not everybody agreed with. He allowed Granit Xhaka to leave the club. It was Granit Xhaka's wish to leave the club. And, you know, he'd already given Mikel Arteta more time than he wanted to give the club, given what happened to him in the past. And, you know, he was able to turn his story from kind of zero to hero, actually, at Arsenal, which was great. But he left And rather than going out and bringing in a like-for-like replacement, Mikel Arteta went and brought in the combination of Declan Rice and Kai Havertz, which changed the balance of the side. Thomas Partey has been out pretty much all season. I think he's played three or four games from the start for Arsenal this season, which has impacted the plans too. But now we're in a place where a lot of the decisions that Mikel made at the start of the season that people were questioning have proven good. Kai Havertz has come good. Declan Rice has been immense from the day he walked in at the football club. And you're looking at this side and you're thinking, yeah, you know, he knows what he's doing and he's taken them to another level and he's given them the ability to be a lot more flexible and adaptable. The results weren't always there in the first part of the season, although we did enough to stay in touch. And since the turn of the year, Arsenal have won 8 out of 8 in the Premier League and have booked their place in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. What is your take on Arsenal this season in comparison to what you thought about them maybe last season? Have you learned anything about the team?
Well, what I would say is we were having a debate the other day on the ESPN talking about who is favourite for the title. And that's a different debate. But between City, Arsenal and Liverpool, for sure, especially since the turn of the year, but I think all season, Arsenal have played by far the best football out of the three. I think Arsenal played the best football in the league by far. I mean, the amount of goals, it's like 32 goals in 7 games or something. It absolutely insane. And I know there were a few like anomalies in there, like Sheffield United, who seemed to not even be wearing boots in that game. But like the way that you were playing was absolutely incredible. Like ruthless, and a ruthlessness that I've only really seen from a Pep Guardiola Manchester City. So I think there's been massive, massive improvements this year. My only fear for Arsenal is that the improvements that have taken place, I'm not sure if they've added. So I think last year you played fantastic football. I think you played amazing football. I think you probably, you know, should have won the league in terms of the way that you were playing and the results that you got. But I think you didn't win the league. And I think that the reason that you didn't was because of a mental aspect. And I think it was a lack of experience and it was a lack of being there. Now, with the signings that you've made, I know Kai Havertz has won the Champions League. I know that Declan Rice has won the Europa Conference League. But I'm not sure if you've improved on that experience element. And like you say, getting rid of Granit Xhaka, you're losing that. And I don't know. I know that the team has got better. And I think that you're playing much better football. And as I say, probably the best in the league. But I think the spark that was missing last year, I don't know what you think about this, but it was potentially the mental aspect and the maybe getting carried away, or when you went so far at the top of the league, the nerves that came with that and the lack of experience of being in that situation, maybe Arsenal players couldn't handle it particularly. And I don't know if you've improved on that aspect yet. And I'm not doing that whole like clickbait, like Arsenal bottle jobs thing. I'm actually trying to understand, like, I think that maybe there's not the experience there that there wasn't last year, which was the comeuppance in the end.
I think it was a combination of both things last season in terms of it being partly because of injuries and the level dropping as a result of that, and not having the depth that you guys have or that Liverpool have built over the years. And I think it partly was the mental side of things as well. I don't think Arsenal, you know, people used to say last season, Arsenal over-celebrated certain moments. I actually think that the energy that Mikel Arteta seems to have kind of brought back to Emirates Stadium is a positive rather than a negative. I don't think it hampers us. I think it gives us a bit extra that we haven't had in recent years.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I remember we beat you 3-0 in 2019. And I know there were protests going on at the time, but the Emirates was like a third full. And then last year,
it was snowing that night. Was it snowing that night?
No, I don't think it was a win for you. That was another year, but but and I remember saying to your mates, as you always do, like, oh my God, Emirates atmosphere, absolutely rubbish, blah, 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 Arsenal fans are crap, as you do. That's how football fans work. And then last year, I know you didn't win the game, but it was like chalk and cheese. I mean, what Arteta has brought back to that football club is really, really fantastic. On the pitch, obviously much better, but off the pitch as well. I don't buy into the whole like over-celebrating thing. I think, as you say, it gives you the energy and it gets all the fans behind the players and it makes them just play much better.
Yeah, totally agree. I think we seem to be a little bit more pragmatic this season in terms of not so much the energy bit, not so much the atmosphere bit, not so much the way in which we celebrate big momentous moments or victories. But I think we've become a bit more pragmatic in the way that we play. So, for example, you look at the game between us in the Community Shield, and I know it is the Community Shield, and you can't read too much into that. But you also look at the league fixture that we had at the Emirates, and it was like two sides that are normally obsessed with dominating the ball, pushing high up, pushing fullbacks into midfield, all of that stuff that we know Arteta and Pep have in common. But what we saw was actually two sides go, do you know what? We're going to be smart here. You guys came to the Emirates and thought, well, we're away from home here. There's no need really for us to force the issue. Yeah. So we're going to kind of sit off and we'll let you have the ball in certain areas and we'll trigger our press maybe a little bit later. And Arsenal did the same thing. Rather than being the gung-ho Arsenal that we've seen in the last couple of years and getting caught out, Arsenal went, you know what? You can have the ball across your back four. Once you play it into the midfield, that's when we'll kind of trigger our aggressive press. And it was like a game of chess. And in the end, the game was decided by a deflected goal late on from Gabriel Martinelli.
Yeah.
But for me, the encouraging thing that day was not, oh, Arsenal won the game because of a slightly fortuitous deflection and all the rest of it. The positive was, look how mature we were. Look how grown up we were. And look at the fact that we knew that first and foremost, we had to stay in the game. And if we did that, then we could change things from the bench and we could shuffle the pack a little bit and we could adopt a different style. Arsenal started to go long towards the end of that game. Yeah. They put Kai Havertz up top. They were even pushing Tomiyasu, who had come on at left back, up into those areas as well and going long and direct. And it just was the first sign for me that Arsenal are now more adaptable. And that's why I think Arsenal fans are probably feeling a little bit more confident now. What's your prediction going into this game? Because I know it's always difficult to do this, and I think it's even more difficult when you're coming off the back of an international break. You don't know who's fit. You don't know whether it affects rhythm a little bit. Much easier to predict when you've got a run of games to go by. But how do you see this going?
I think because it's at the Etihad and the record there has been absolutely exceptional, you've also got this mad Rodri record of not losing in over a year. I really cannot foresee Arsenal winning the game at all. I also don't think that it's going to be a title decider in any way, shape or form. There's so much football to be played. All three of us are in European competitions. So I think whatever happens tomorrow, it matters a bit, but it doesn't actually matter that much. It's more just the spectacle of the it's more the spectacle of the fact that it's going to be a fantastic game. I think City will win. I don't think it'll be that easy. And I think it'll be quite cagey. And I think my prediction would be 1-0. I think it'll be a 1-0 game. I think because of the team that we're probably going to have to play, particularly at the back, I think we're going to be a lot more cautious than we would usually be. And I think we're quite hard to break down when we actually play that style of football. And when Rodri drops deeper, Bernardo keeps hold of the ball, Jack Grealish keeps hold of the ball if he's playing. I think it's going to be 1-0 to City. What do you think?
Oh, this is tough. I did the ESPN football forecast yesterday and I predicted a 2-1 Arsenal win, but I'm well aware that that was a prediction made with my heart rather than my head.
Yeah.
My head says draw. My head says draw. And I think there's a real possibility that come the end of the weekend, despite it being Manchester City and Arsenal locking horns, I think there's a real possibility that we're talking about Liverpool as having been the biggest beneficiaries of the weekend. They've got a very winnable fixture at home to Brighton, a Brighton side that aren't quite what they used to be, don't seem to have that potency in front of goal, leak goals for fun, you know, clean sheets. You know, you ask someone in Brighton what a clean sheet is, they'll probably tell you they don't know because that's the nature of the way they've been playing. But I just think that we'll probably play out a draw and it will be Liverpool who will be sort of rubbing their hands together come Sunday night. And, you know, just before I let you go, Kim, on the title race in general, how are you kind of ranking it in terms of favourites? Are Man City your favourites? Who's the second favourites? And how wary are you of Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool? Does the farewell tour give them something more?
Yeah, as soon as Klopp announced he was leaving, I said Liverpool will win the league, and I've stayed pretty true to that. I think Liverpool will for sure win the league. I think this would be Arsenal's best chance. I think it's unfortunate that you've got Bayern Munich in the quarterfinal of the Champions League, because you want to be competing and you want to be showing that you can compete on both fronts. But that's a very, very winnable fixture. And then you play against either City or Madrid in the semi-finals. And you've got a better depth, but you've still probably not got the depth to compete in the title race in games where every single minute matters and compete against Bayern Munich twice, home and away, and probably Real Madrid or City, home and away. I think that'll be your sort of downfall this season will be the Champions League run, which, by the way, you very much could win. But I think the league will be, I think the Champions League will be a distraction to the league. I think Liverpool will win the league. And I actually think either City or Arsenal will win the Champions League. I think you'll beat Bayern. I think we'll beat Real Madrid. And then I think realistically, whoever wins in that game, it's a Champions League final. It's a 50-50, isn't it?
Man.
You probably have to favour us.
I get killed by sort of fellow Arsenal fans for saying that I'd rather we won the Champions League than the league.
Oh, for
Because growing up, I saw Arsenal win the double in 97, 98. I saw them win the double in 01, 02. I saw them win the Premier League unbeaten in 03 or 04. It doesn't get better than that.
No.
But then the Champions League has always been that thing that's been missing. And I feel like that's the one that would give me the most personal satisfaction.
Look, I can tell you from experience, like, I've been a City fan my whole life. The thought of even winning a Premier League or an FA Cup when I was growing up was ludicrous to me. But after 10 years of regularly competing in the Premier League, lifting that Champions League trophy, there was nothing like it. And you know what? To be honest, it sounds ridiculous because I'd rather win the Premier League because I go every single game. It means more to me. But you get affected by what other fans say, don't you? And you need that monkey off your back. You need the European trophy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I tell you when it kind of really dawned on me how important a European trophy is when I go to like places like West Ham and they're singing Champions of Europe. You'll never sing that because they won that tin pot Europa Conference League trophy.
Let
them have it. Or I went to Nottingham Forest maybe a couple of months ago and they were singing it as well. I mean, most of the stadium wasn't alive when Forest won the European Cups, but you know, they were going on about it as well. It's a real, and that's the thing that drives me mad when it comes to the Arsenal-Chelsea rivalry as well. Like, we're far more successful than them domestically, but obviously they've got those Champions Leagues, which Arsenal don't. So yeah, it's a tough one.
What do you think, league and Champions League wise? Do you think Arsenal will end up with a trophy this year?
Oh, it's really tough to say because I do think you're right to kind of suggest that there's a correlation between the two. There is a connection between the two. It's why the title race is so difficult to predict, because if Arsenal, for example, got a really good, convincing result over Bayern, that could be a massive boost.
Yeah.
But you also know that if you suffer something that's quite demoralizing, it's quite hard to shake that off in the space of 2 or 3 days and then get back to Premier League football with a full focus on that without allowing that hangover from another competition to spill over.
Yeah.
So I do think that you either need to go really well in both or you need to fall out of the running for one of them quite soon for you to then be able to shift your focus accordingly. So I think it's tough. I think it's tough. But, you know, we've been saying for years as Arsenal fans that we want to be in these competitions. We want to be in these conversations. And now we are again. We can't complain. So,
yeah,
it is what it is. Kim, thank you so, so much for taking time out of your day on a bank holiday as well to join me. I really appreciate it. Let people know how they can follow you and what you're up to.
Yeah, at Kim Kattari on Instagram and Twitter.
Kim, thank you. There you go. He's everywhere. Thank you so much, mate. And we'll catch up soon, I'm sure.
Cheers. Thanks, mate. Good luck.
All the best. Cheers. That was the brilliant Kim Kattari joining me to provide the Manchester City point of view ahead of this huge, huge game coming up on Sunday. Let's go over to the live chat because there is lots of comments coming through at the moment. A big hello to everybody who is joining us, whether it be on X or on YouTube. If you are on X, come over to YouTube. Give us a subscribe on YouTube. If you're listening on the audio platforms a little bit later on, please do subscribe there as well. And if you are already watching on YouTube, well, you know what to do, guys. The like button is your friend. It really, really does help. I can see that we've only got a fairly small amount of likes on the board in comparison to how many of you are watching. So if we could fix that, I'd be super grateful. Still to come on the pod, we're going to be discussing the fitness of Gabriel, Saka, and Martinelli. We're going to talk about some of the key battles that could decide the outcome of this fixture. I'm going to share with you guys my starting 11, and we'll have a look at how the two clubs compare this season in terms of some of the Premier League statistics. We're going to do all of that right after this. Don't go anywhere. Okay, welcome back. Right, what are you guys saying? Lorcan says, I'm with you, Harry. I need us to win the Champions League and shut up all the Chelsea supporters. Yeah, me too. Steve disagrees. Steve says that the Premier League is the number one priority. I mean, I get why people say that, because I do think a lot of people say, you know, Premier League is your bread and butter, and, you know, you can win a cup competition without necessarily being the best team in your country. But if you do win the Premier League, which is undoubtedly the toughest division in world football, then there's a good argument and there's a strong case that actually you're probably the best club side in world football. And that is, you know, some kind of title to have, isn't it? So I get what you're saying, but I have to say, I disagree. It's Champions League first and foremost for me. The league would be lovely as well. But the Champions League is the one that is missing from my sort of mental collection as a fan. Okay, let's talk about the fitness of Bukayo Saka, of Gabriel, and of Martinelli, because they're quite different cases. So we know that Bukayo Saka went and reported into to sort of England duty and was training initially by himself away from the rest of the group because of an ongoing issue that he's been nursing for quite a while. The decision was then taken for him to withdraw from the squad and make sure that there was no risk taken. And I wonder if, and you know, I don't know this for a fact, but I wonder if Gareth Southgate and his staff, who will have been well aware of this issue that Bukayo Saka's been carrying, looking at it and thinking, well, it's a friendly and we've got a couple of friendlies, maybe this gives us an opportunity to look at a couple of other players. Well, perhaps in favour of Bukayo Saka, you know, returning back to his club and focusing solely on the rehabilitation, because the last thing they want is him to break down in the remaining weeks of the season and not be available for the tournament. He's established himself as a really, really important player at international level. So I'm not saying that England would have been chuffed about it or happy about it per se, but I do think there's probably an element of acceptance among the England staff that if there is any risk with Bukayo Saka, we know what he's all about, gives us the opportunity to look at others, will allow him and not really put up much of a fight when it comes to him returning back to his club. Similar problem with Gabriel, Big Gabby, that is, at the back. He's been nursing an inflamed Achilles, and an Achilles injury is quite a bad one. It can be really, really painful. He's been nursing some inflammation to that area. And again, the decision was taken, let's not take any risks. Let's not gamble on him. We are talking about friendlies again. Let's let him go back. Let's let him work on his rehabilitation. And then there's the Gabriel Martinelli situation, which is a little bit different, because initially we were told that Gabriel Martinelli had a cut on the foot. And, you know, we didn't know the ins and outs of the cut and we weren't privy to all the details. But the first sort of reaction from people having heard that was, oh, he'll be fine. You know, he'll be back very, very soon. And we haven't seen him since then. And he has been seen leaving Emirates Stadium on crutches, which isn't a good sign. And I do believe that of the three players that we're talking about here, Gabriel, Bukayo Saka, and Gabriel Martinelli, I think the one who's probably struggling the most in terms of making himself available for this game is Gabriel Martinelli. I think the other two are nursing issues that they've been dealing with for quite some time. And I think they'll be okay, fingers crossed, obviously. But with Gabriel Martinelli, I do get the sense and sort of from the conversations I've had, and I'm not claiming to be in the know, by the way, but I do get the sense that he's the one of the three that is struggling the most to be fit and available for this game. People have been saying it all week. Surely Arsenal are just being careful. Surely Arsenal are just being really cautious because of what's at stake in the remainder of the season. And when you think about the April that we've got coming up, 10 games in the month of April, that is a game every 3 days. We're going to need to be able to rotate, and getting some players back from long-term injuries is going to be key in that, obviously. But we also need our best players to be wrapped up in cotton wool. I would suggest that the training workloads are significantly reduced during this period in order to make sure that they can be at their best when the games are coming thick and fast. And I really do think that Arsenal will be well aware of that and will manage the situation as best as they can. But it is about wrapping these guys up in cotton wool in between the matches in which they're required now, I think, because we're just at that point in the season. We're going to take it on to some of the key battles, because I think there are some really key battles in this game that I'm so intrigued about, and I think could be huge in terms of determining the outcome of this one. Individual battles all over the pitch. Two very, very good sides locking horns on Sunday. We're previewing that right here on the Chronicles of Aguna. It's the big match preview with me, Harry Shimiu. After the break, we're going to talk about some of those key battles and get into the nitty-gritty of them.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Okay, let's start off with who plays up front. Now, I'm going to share my full starting lineup with you guys a little bit later on, but I'm giving you a bit of a spoiler here because I do think it is imperative, because of the nature of this game, that Kai Havertz plays up front. I think he's got to be the one selected in the nine position. In terms of form, he's producing at the moment. He's gone on international duty and made a difference for Germany as well, scoring a goal away to France in what was a big, big victory for Julian Nagelsmann's side. But it's not just about the confidence. It's not just about the form. It's not just about the fact that in recent weeks he's been able to find the net with regularity. For me, it's about what Kai Havertz brings to the team. Now, you'd have heard me speak in the past about him and refer to him as a bit of a Swiss Army knife. I really do think Kai Havertz is that. And one of the things that has seen us progress, in my opinion, is this newfound ability to play in different ways. Now, that comes with having adaptable personnel, and Kai Havertz is definitely 100% that. You want to play the intricate stuff around the penalty area with him involved? You can, because technically he's good enough. You want to go that little bit more direct and that little bit longer? You can, because he's got that physical presence. And if you think about the impact he's had in games against City already, then this is a no-brainer for me. How much we can get Kai Havertz involved in the game and whether or not he can be clinical if one of those big chances and big moments falls his way is going to be huge in terms of the outcome of this game. And I'm buzzing to see how he gets on, but he's got to be selected up front first. And I think that Arteta will take that decision. I think that Arteta's mind is probably already made up. You know, Gabriel Jesus is back in the picture and he's a wonderful player. And we've even seen reports over the last couple of days that, you know, the coaching staff are really impressed with how sharp he's looking after a couple of setbacks, with how good his finishing has been in training, et cetera, et cetera. But there's no reason right now to take Kai Havertz out of the team. And Gabriel Jesus, who would have been, if he was fit, one of the first names on the team sheet last season, has to bide his time now, has to wait, and has to force his way back in, you know, when that opportunity presents itself. But going into this game, there's no reason why Kai Havertz shouldn't be the man leading the line for Arsenal. I really, really do believe that. Kim told us a little bit earlier on in the podcast that Kyle Walker's situation is very much 50-50 at the moment, that he's not been involved in Manchester City training so far. I wonder if there's an element of maybe Manchester City trying to keep that under wraps. You know, we know that Arsenal have had players in training, but made sure that photos of said individual didn't go out in order to try and keep that mystique around whether or not they're available and whether or not they're fit. I do think that if Kyle Walker is unavailable, then the Martinelli factor and whether or not he's going to be fit becomes huge in terms of, you know, how this game might go. I think what we've got in Martinelli is something unique, something that we don't have in Saka and we don't have in Trossard, because they both obviously like to come inside. Martinelli comes inside too because he's a right-footed player, but he comes inside a lot later and he's got far more sort of a willingness, I guess, to get his head down and drive down the flank and really force people back. We've seen David Raya's distribution improve week on week, and he's been able to find Martinelli on a few occasions, which has led to big, big moments for the Arsenal in recent times. I think that if Kyle Walker is available, then whether or not Martinelli is available becomes less significant, because Kyle Walker, quite simply, has got the pace to keep up with Gabriel Martinelli. If Kyle Walker is unavailable and we do have Gabriel Martinelli, then I think that's a real weak spot for this Manchester City side. I don't know who they would move into the right back position. John Stones is a doubt as well, which, you know, could rule out the possibility of them maybe using somebody else at centre back and shifting him out there, a position in which he's played before. Would they switch Rico Lewis out to there? I don't know. But whatever way they would look to deal with that, I would back Gabriel Martinelli to have whoever that fullback is on toast. If it's Kyle Walker, though, it's very, very different. So I think for us to have an outlet, Martinelli being available is really important. The way he drags us up the pitch, he's always, I think, more effective in away games, Gabriel Martinelli, because of that dynamic that he brings. But as I say, it's very interesting, because if Walker's fit, then the Martinelli effect is nullified to a point. And maybe it's not as big a factor. I'm not saying Martinelli can't produce anything because Kyle Walker's in the team. What I'm saying is the likelihood of him producing a match-winning moment, I think, with Walker there is less. If Walker's not available, then I'll be desperate to see Martinelli fit. Look, I want him to be fit anyway, but I think I'd be more desperate to see him start if Kyle Walker was out. But we'd have to see how that goes. We talked about some of the injury doubts. Gabriel at the back is another one, and I'm desperate to see him come through a fitness test. I think he will, but I think he's going to be imperative to helping us deal with the threat of Haaland and some of those runs that those Manchester City midfielders like to make from deep into those areas. And, you know, we like to push someone into midfield from the back four. And the only way you can do that really, really effectively is by having really physical, strong and mobile defenders who can eat up the ground around them. And Gabriel is certainly one of those players. I think the midfield battle is going to be really, really key as well. I think Arsenal need to get the balance right there. But I don't want to give away my lineup just yet. So we're going to park that for a second and we're going to go over to the live chat in just a minute. Don't forget, if you are watching the Chronicles of Aguna live on X right now, be sure to come over to the YouTube channel. Give us a subscribe, like the video, all of the rest of it. Turn the notification bell on so that you never miss an episode. If you are already with us on the YouTube channel, please do subscribe if you haven't done so already and leave a like below. It really, really does help. And of course, our dear friends listening on audio, I know you guys are super loyal, and you know, I know that your inboxes or your feeds load up with an episode every time we drop one. And I'm so grateful for your support and love. If you could leave a review on whichever audio platform it is that you like to join us from, that would be very, very much appreciated too. Okay, should we talk starting lineup? I think that time has come. So I think there's a few decisions for Mikel to make. I think the back four, if everybody's fit and available, picks itself. It should be Raya in goal. It should be White at right back. It should be Saliba and Gabriel across the middle, with, in my opinion, Jakub Kivior at left back. Tomiyasu's back, great. He played a behind closed doors friendly the other day against QPR. But he is not ready, in my opinion, to be thrust into a game like this. Now, if you're talking about bringing him on for the last 20 minutes to shut up shop, or, you know, to manage a certain situation, I'm all right with that. But to throw him in from the start would not only be a massive gamble and a massive risk, I think it would be hugely unfair on Jakub Kivior, who has done really, really well lately in terms of adapting to that left-back position and taking it on and taking his performances to a whole nother level, to the point where we're all really, really impressed by him. At the start, there were question marks over Jakub Kivior, even in his preferred position of centre-back. You look at him now, he's absolutely flying. I do wonder, though, if the fact that he played obviously extra time with Poland against Wales the other night could impact on Mikel Arteta's thinking. We know that Zinchenko is back available as well. For me personally, I know he gives you lots on the ball, lots of control, and I know that Mikel Arteta loves all of that about Zinchenko. I don't want to see him start in this game because I think it's too big a defensive risk. And so for me, he's the third choice in terms of the pecking order. He might not be the third in terms of his fitness levels. He's probably second behind Kivior, but he'd certainly be ahead of Tomiyasu in that sense. But I just don't think that that I would want to bring Zinchenko in a game like this. I think it's a huge gamble and not one I'd be willing to take. The midfield is interesting because I think a lot of us would agree that Declan Rice probably should play as the six in a game like this. In years gone by, we've seen Manchester City expose those spaces in between the lines and destroy us. And they've done that with intricate, cute play. They've also done that with runs from deep, with runs from outside to in, with the centre forward dropping deep at times and people going in beyond him. They've done all of that to us over the years. And I feel like that area of the pitch is really, really important. Some people are suggesting, again, having played in the behind closed doors friendly the other day, that maybe Thomas Partey should come into the side. Look, in an ideal world, and I've said this many times, for me, the midfield would be Rice, Partey and Odegaard. That's the three that I want to see when everybody's fit, at peak condition and available. But a bit like Tomiyasu, it's not that I don't trust in the player's ability. I'm not sure about where his fitness is at right now. And to throw him in, I think, would be a huge gamble as well. Having said that, I'm not confident in Jorginho playing as the six. I think we need to do something that we've seen on a couple of occasions this season, and that would be using Rice as the six, but having Jorginho sit alongside him, venture slightly further forward at times, help protect the left back a little bit, look to progress the ball from deep, particularly if we got that option of Kai Havertz up front and we can go that little bit longer. I think the balance that Rice and Jorginho bring you is the right balance. And that balance allows Odegaard, I think, to be a little bit freer in his movement. And we all know that when you let Martin Odegaard off the leash, you know, he's capable of popping up in different areas and winning football matches. The front three for me, if everybody's fit, would be that front three of Martinelli on the left, Saka on the right, and Kai Havertz through the middle. But again, a lot of this is subject to fitness. And it's so tough after an international break to know where people are at. It's so tough to know what the inner workings are at this moment in time. I would have said, let's wait for Mikel Arteta's press conference and then we can try and make a more informed guess. But the truth is, Mikel Arteta isn't going to tell us anything, is he? He never does. And he's certainly not going to show his hand to Pep Guardiola before a game like this. If I show you then my starting 11, this is the 11 I'd pick. Raya in goal, just to summarise. White, Saliba, Gabriel and Kivior across the back. Rice, Jorginho and Odegaard in midfield with Martinelli, Havertz and Saka up front. And then you think about what you've got on the bench. You could bring on a Takahiro Tomiyasu. You could bring on a Leandro Trossard, a Gabby Jesus, a Thomas Partey. All of a sudden, that squad depth looks so much more impressive, doesn't it? So I can understand why a lot of Arsenal fans are feeling optimistic, confident and feeling like we can go there and cause what would be, in a lot of people's eyes, a big upset. But this is Manchester City. They've got a formidable record at the Etihad. And I just think that we need to, we need to first and foremost make sure that we're in this game rather than going there being sort of overly confident, overly buoyant and expecting Arsenal to go there and turn them over and take all 3 points as if it's something that can be achieved really, really easily. I'm going to take some of your questions from the chat in a few minutes. So start getting them in. Put a queue at the beginning of them and I'll pick up as many of those as I possibly can before we disappear. But before I do that, I just want to share with you guys a few statistics. We're going to have a look at how the two teams' seasons compare according to the Premier League's website. Okay, if we hop over to premierleague.com, I'll just bring this up on my screen. Obviously, City currently in third place, Arsenal top. They've won 19 games. We've won 20. They've drawn 6. We've drawn 4. They've only lost 3 times. We've lost 4. Average goals scored per match. Arsenal this season, and I know a lot of that has been impacted by what we've managed to do in recent weeks. It's incredible to see that Arsenal have averaged more goals per match than Manchester City. But as I say, there is context to that. We've been in excellent goal scoring form since the turn of the year, and that's really helped us in that. We've had 3 more clean sheets than them, 11 in comparison to their 8. They do, however, according to the Premier League's website, create more clear-cut opportunities per game on average than the Arsenal do. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of those metrics are pretty similar. We know that the difference in terms of points is minimal at this moment in time. You're talking about a situation here where literally there's 1 point between third and first at the moment. Manchester City in third on 63, Liverpool in second on 64, and Arsenal top on 64 due to their superior goal difference. We've actually scored 7 more goals than City as well, and we've conceded 4 less. You know, obviously our goal difference is better, which, you know, makes sense thinking about that. But just thinking about what Kim was saying earlier about Manchester City and the fact that they're not as formidable defensively, it should give us confidence that we can go there and hurt them. However, people keep saying this is must not lose, this is must not lose, this is must not lose. This isn't must not. Yeah, people keep saying it's must not lose. That's absolutely spot on. It's not must win. It's absolutely must not lose, first and foremost. You go there, which is going to be your most tough away trip of the season, and you come out of there unscathed with regards to us and Manchester City and with a point on the board. You accept that Liverpool have a fixture this week that's going to give them the advantage, and you just need to then get your head down and focus on winning the rest of your games. It's going to be fascinating between now and the end of the season. I'm here for it. I'm ready for it. I really, really am. Okay, guys, I'm going to take a really, really short pause. And when I come back, we're going to look at the live chat and we're going to take some of your questions and thoughts. We'll also check in on the poll, which is a prediction poll ahead of Sunday's game. Okay, let's have a look at some of your questions and take some of your thoughts from the live chat. Big hello to Chris Jonathan, who says, first time live in a long time. Good to have you back, Harry. Good to have you with us, mate. Good to see you. Thanks for joining us. Just on the subject of live streams, I got cooked yesterday in the comments after saying that Arsenal were the third favourites. I'm willing to say that if we win at the Etihad on Sunday, I'll revise those predictions. But I think we're going to draw. That's my prediction. I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw. I think that's the most likely outcome this weekend. Arsenal Avenger says, do you think Arteta is the most important person on Sunday? This will be a tactical game. It's really, really interesting because I think, yeah, you know, you've got two managers that know each other inside out. They know each other's methods. They understand each other's philosophies. I think it's fair to say that a lot of Arteta's philosophy would be built on foundations laid by Pep Guardiola, really. And so there is a risk and there is a danger that because of how well they know each other, both managers could overcomplicate things and leave themselves vulnerable. I think both are so good that we will more than likely see one of them find a way to come out on top, as opposed to, you know, one of them pressing the self-destruct button or maybe overcomplicating the way he sets out his team in a desperate attempt to gain the smallest of advantages. But, you know, when two managers know each other inside out and are of this level, then yeah, it's going to be a tactical game. But I also think this is a game that's going to be decided on moments and, you know, who can take their chances, who can remain concentrated when it really, really matters, who's going to make a vital tackle, a vital block, who's going to hold their nerve when it really, really matters. And that is why a lot of people think that City are going to do us on Sunday. And that is why a lot of people still make City their title favourites, because City have been in these situations year after year after year. But you know what? I'll tell you this. This is Arsenal's moment, not necessarily to go to the Etihad and win, not necessarily because there is a pressure to do that, not necessarily because if we don't win, our title hopes evaporate and fade away. This is Arsenal's moment because they have a real opportunity here to go to the Etihad and show everybody, including themselves, that they are now on a level playing field with the best club side in world football, that they are capable of competing, not just in one-off fixtures, but regularly with the best team in club football. Arsenal were really disappointing in the two games against City last season. The outcomes were damaging, obviously, for Arsenal's title hopes. But you go back to the very beginning of this season in the Community Shield, Arsenal were very competitive. If you move that on to the league game, Arsenal came out on top again after being very competitive. And we saw a different side to Arsenal. We saw a composure, a calmness, a steel that we haven't seen from Arsenal for many a years. But doing it at the Emirates is one thing. Going to the Etihad and coming out on top would be a huge, huge statement. And so I say this is Arsenal's moment because they have an opportunity to create that kind of statement victory and come away with all 3 points. And that would have a big impact on the title race, but also it will convince those players, if there's any little bit of doubt about whether or not they're ready to compete with the very best on a regular basis, that would go if they went to the Etihad and win on Sunday. That would disappear. That would evaporate. And that would be the kind of confidence boost that could well see Arsenal go on and have a brilliant and thrilling end to the season. If they lose the game, I don't think things change that much. It would have been, well, we beat them at home, they beat us at home. If we draw, but we do it in a pretty comfortable way, and you're going to need to ride your luck at times when you go away to Manchester City. I think everybody understands and accepts that. But if Arsenal were to go and get a solid point, I think that could be the coming of age moment for this team as well. When I say this is Arsenal's moment, I don't mean to put pressure on them to go and secure all 3 points. I think they can achieve that objective of proving themselves, not just within the camp, but to everybody else watching, that they are ready to compete with the very, very best. They don't necessarily need to win the game, but they need to go and show something and make that statement and show everybody that Arsenal under Mikel Arteta are here to stay. And that after falling away last season, they're ready to give it a better go this season and put it in people's minds that they'll be there or thereabouts again next season, because it's about maintaining this level. It's not about just being a flash in the pan. You've got to prove to people that you are a force and that you are going to be a force in the coming years. Those are the foundations that Mikel Arteta has been laying. But there comes a point where you need to take that next step. And going to Manchester City and getting a result in a high-pressured situation like this, going into the final stretch of a title run, would be that coming-of-age moment and would be a big, big statement. Okay, let's go back over to the live chat and see what you guys are saying. Lots of people saying that that City aren't what they used to be. Kim said that earlier on in the pod as well. I'm not going to say that ahead of this one. Sko says, Harry, I think most of us believe now that Arsenal are in form and have the quality to go and win there. But if City win, do you think Arsenal still have a chance to win the league over the remaining games? Do they have a chance? Yes, because it's the Premier League and anything can happen. Would I make it a good chance, though? No, I wouldn't. Just because I think that they've got far easier fixtures than us for the remainder of the campaign. And I would just see it as very unlikely that Arsenal would accrue more points than Manchester City over that period of time. And if we were to fall behind them, because if they beat us, they would go up to 66 points. We'd be 2 points behind. You know, you'd essentially, you know, you'd need them to draw a game and you win one. But when you look at the remaining fixtures, I think that's unlikely. So, yeah, not impossible. But I think to expect Arsenal to claw back the points they would lose at City at the weekend, given the run-ins that the two sides have, I think would be optimistic rather than realistic. You've obviously got to give it a go while you're in with a shout and while it's mathematically possible. But as someone who's trying to predict it, then you've got to go with your head rather than your heart on that. Evan says, are you more nervous or excited? I'm nervous at the moment. I normally have a bit of a cycle going into these types of games. So I start off nervous. Then the day before the game, I'll be really buoyant and like charged up and saying, come on, we're going to do this. We're going to go there. You know, we're going to stuff them. We're going to make a statement victory. We're going to nick it 1-0, 89th minute corner, Saliba rising at the near post or something like that. And then on the morning of the game, I'll be bricking it again. So I go through this weird cycle ahead of big old games like this. But yeah, it's going to be fascinating. My prediction, as I said, is a 1-1 draw. I hope you've enjoyed the preview show here on the Chronicles of Aguna podcast. Big thanks again to Kim Kotari, who joined me, Manchester City fan, to give us their side of things ahead of what is a massive, massive game. We're not going to be live on Sunday night because I will be at the Etihad and I'll be traveling back after the game. But we will be live with you on Bank Holiday Monday morning at 10 a.m. We're going to break it all down. Win, lose or draw, we're going to be there. We're going to assess it. We're going to break it all down. We're going to try and figure out what went wrong, what went well, and we're going to assess where we're at off the back of that. Thank you, as always, for your support. Thank you for joining. It is very, very much appreciated. And I will see you all very, very soon. Until the next one, up the Arsenal. Come on, you Gunners. Huge, huge game. Can we do it? Let me know in the comments. I'll catch you all soon. Goodbye.